Hello, welcome to the Carnegie Mellon Book Podcast. I'm Dylan, and I'm so excited to discuss this week's pick. Last month, I saw Gloria put on by the drama school here at CMU, and it was incredible. I went in blind, and I will say before listening to this, if you haven't read it, or you want to read it, or if you want to see it, I would recommend maybe listening to Super Frog Saves Tokyo with Dylan Rossi, because I think it's a show that you kind of should go into blind. Mm-hmm. But I found Brandon Jacobs Jenkins' writing to be unmatched and witty, sharp, thought-provoking. He's a two-time Pulitzer Prize nominee. He's insane, but there's so much to talk about, and I'm so happy we're talking about this in the university press office because it's very fitting. But I'm thrilled to welcome a very special guest today, Evan Vines. Evan, introduce yourself and share a bit about your experience with Gloria and your journey in theater. It's almost like you're an actor or something.
No, I'm Evan. I'm a senior at Carnegie. I'm majoring in acting. And I also make music on the side as well. I got music out on all platforms in case you want to listen to that. But yeah, I've been acting for like most of my life. Three of my big brothers all did acting growing up. So in Taiwan, that's sort of where I got my like first start. Then moved to Texas, probably around seventh grade.
Fellow Texan. Even though I don't consider myself a Texan.
What do you consider yourself to be? Floridian?
Unfortunately, it doesn't fit, but it is like a fact.
Okay. Yeah. Fellow half Texan. And and then I just kept doing theater ever since I moved to Texas. And then now I'm at Carnegie. Audition started in the spring. So I've known that I was going to play Lauren for like a long time. Lauren, he's like the oldest in the cast.
Wait, audition started in the spring?
In the spring.
Oh, so you were like, I mean, not prepping because I know you were doing theater over the summer in New York, but you had it, the character in the back of your mind. It was simmering for a while.
Definitely. I like bought my script when I was doing a show in New York. Oh. And so I was sort of reading it while doing that show. And I think that first read is always like the most, you know, hitting, where you're just kind of like experiencing it all for the first time. And so,
did you have any prior knowledge to Jenkins' work, or did you know what Gloria, like the big plot twist in Gloria after Act One?
I had to know it for the audition.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's sort of something that I learned like actually being cast. But like when reading the full script for the first time, like in New York, like that was really fitting. And I just remember like kind of feeling super off for the rest of the day and the rest of the week. And
I also felt off after seeing it a little bit. It's a little bit unnerving. And also, I don't know if you knew this, you probably do know this, but the writer worked at the New Yorker as a publishing editorial assistant in his 20s.
Wow.
Yeah, and he basically declares that it's not based off of his time at the New Yorker. However, it's like that environment obviously inspired him.
Mm-hmm. And like, man, it's just so strange that like I saw Appropriate, which was on Broadway, and that's
been... I don't know anything about Appropriate.
Oh, well, that's okay.
Okay.
Sarah Paulson, I believe is her name.
Sarah Paulson.
Yeah. She was incredible. And I had an incredible time watching that. And so just seeing them like perform and seeing their physicality and like how they just took on the characters and lived in that world.
You were fantastic, and so was everyone else in the production.
Thanks.
And I'm not super familiar with the past productions at the drama school, so correct me if I'm wrong, but Gloria feels very modern and contemporary to what most colleges or high schools would typically put on. I mean, there are themes and ideas that are timeless with like power and validation, but it's also so tied to like late stage capitalism and its critique of the commodification of trauma and the profitability of individuals and like Sarah Tweedy's death. But the play first appeared on stage in 2015, capturing basically the 2010s media culture in the US. And this play carries, like you said, we both kind of felt off when you first read it and I first saw it, carries weight and feels so important. And I want to know your kind of perspective and opinion on why Gloria feels and is so important and why its themes also kind of resonate today.
I definitely think that it's just something that's going to be relevant for a long time, this play. I think it can be done continuously.
Unfortunately.
Unless we see a change in the future, but given the recent election, I don't see a change in the future, which is sad to say. But I think that's why it makes this important, this story so important. And with so many close people coming to see the show, I feel like they left the show with a lot of questions, and there were some really important conversations that were had, especially with my family too, that I've never was able to have with the show before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And so it was just something that was kind of world opening when it comes to talking about heavy topics like this.
And when you mean heavy topics, are you talking specifically about the gun violence? Or
gun
violence,
workplace toxicity.
Yeah. The disposableness of being in your 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Kendra has that like fantastic line. I actually have it written down. She says, "You're going to wake up one day and the thing you thought would be an interesting thing to do after college is actually your career, and then you have to live with it." Mm-hmm. And I just thought that really captured kind of the moment.
A lot of the play is really pessimistic, or at least what the characters say. Just there's this very kind of like not that much hope like from the characters, but I don't know. I feel like there's a part of it that's still... Lauren specifically brings that.
I was just about to say, if anything, Lauren feels like the most hopeful character because he's the one who ends the play and he talks to, I don't know exactly what his name is, but it's the guy who played Dean.
Mm-hmm. Aiden Wynn? What do you mean?
No, not the actor. Like the he played Dean, but he's a new character in the last scene.
In the third act, Devin.
Devin. Yeah. You're talking to Devin, and Devin's like the IT guy or something.
That's right.
And he's like frustrated with you because you don't know how to work technology. And basically, you're like, you want to go out for a beer? And that's the change. And that's the most like significant way to end the story, I feel like, because it's like this character who is forgotten and is not remembered for the shooting, like Nan is or whatever, mm-hmm. is making that very pivotal change of having this connection. But as an actor, I'm curious, mm-hmm. what's your process for reading a script? Mm-hmm. And specifically, you played Lauren, obviously. What was the process like getting into his character? I know we both share kind of this mutual appreciation for Jeremy Strong.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And, you know, Jeremy Strong is one of my favorite actors, and I read a really long interview with him, and he talks about his inspirations like from Daniel Day-Lewis mm-hmm. and Hoffman and a couple other method actors. And I'm curious like what your process is getting into a character and mm-hmm. if you resonate with method acting or mm-hmm. if you think where it's like the other Succession actresses, this is going to be embarrassing. Yeah. It's showing how much of a fanatic I am. Like
no, I love Succession. I know exactly what you're talking about too.
Sarah Snook, who plays Shiv, she basically talks about, no, I'm not method, because then it feels like it's not raw anymore. It's not new. You know, I mm-hmm. feel like I get tired of the feeling very quickly, and that is apparent on screen. She says something around that. Don't quote me, but...
Yeah, no, I feel like the first time you read a script and the first time you say the words, that's when they're kind of like the most potent and they feel like the most like fresh.
Scary.
Yeah, and then each time you repeat it, you kind of have to like, you know, add a little bit something different. You got to like, I don't know, do something different to...
Trial and error.
Yeah, trial and error. Because whatever you're saying, you have to make it seem like you're saying it for the very first time, and all of it's like coming like sporadically. But it feels like after that first read, you get a general sense of like each character's purpose in the story. And I felt like it's really clear what Lauren's purpose is. And like even after like we did the show, there were things that I was realizing about the script. My mom like came up to me and she was like, this is like the most clownish I've seen you in a role. And I'm like, oh.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, clownish. I never even like thought of Lauren as that. But then I go back to the script.
I still don't see that.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Well, I saw his character description. It says, Lauren, a sad, 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 sad man. And it makes you laugh, right?
Yeah.
Seeing this poor guy.
That's what his description is? Oh, my God.
And I just remember like that Friday show that we had. Is that the one that you came to Friday? Yeah. There was just like, well, that was the day all of our friends were in the audience.
Okay.
It was the 4 o'clock show. and they were just laughing really, really hard at just like all of the sad lines that Lauren was saying, and it just made me realize that like I feel like he kind of is kind of a comedic relief.
I feel like in every live production or live theater, just in general, and you take like very famous plays, there's that character that kind of delivers this monologue that is basically the kind of describes like the magnum opus of what the audience needs to take away from the piece of art. And sometimes it's not necessarily something positive. And I feel like Lauren's speech, which not the one about wait, there's like one that's so funny. You have like this quick in and out about like getting a BA in French.
I say I'm sitting here waiting to be called back by some 26-year-old who happens to be the one person in the world with a BA in French, with a PhD on Sarah
But
Tweed.
his speech about, or your speech about the probability of death, and you say, and what is a profile actually doing besides throwing one human being after another to the wolves of history, rendering entire lives flat and uncomplicated and 8,000 words long? Why does dying suddenly make someone more interesting? And that is just like the play, because everyone's fighting now over.
I completely agree with you so far. That is like kind of the
It is
play.
the play, yeah. And I guess you could say the Kendra line prior is also a lot about the play, but if
I
anything,
do
I Lauren
think.
and Miles are two of the most important characters in Gloria. Lauren stands out because he's the aged one on stage, representing what happens when you've been chewed out by the system. And he's an extension, if anything, into the future of like the anguish that these 20-something year olds will face after years of working in this toxic environment and like in corporate America in general. And Miles, which by the way, whoever played Miles, like
Daryl
fantastic.
Ifolte,
Oh
he's
my God.
fantastic.
He was great. Serves kind of as this foil to everyone else because he's bright-eyed, idealistic, kind, young, and the type of person who genuinely believes in doing his job right,
Yeah,
despite not
eager.
being passionate about it.
Yeah, oh, that's
And
true.
he's like one of the few characters, probably besides Ani a little bit in Act One, who actually does his job. You know, like he's, I remember watching it and I was just like, they're all like spitting shit at one another, and this guy is like the only one doing his job. I was wondering like your thoughts on Nan and kind of the, and Lauren and these kind of aged characters in the story.
I've met people similar to Nan that, they said the same things that she says in that scene, especially in Starbucks, where she literally excuses something that her coworker said. She's like, "Oh, but they're fine. They're just old." And it just kind of seems like an
I
excuse.
think it's noteworthy to point out that the survivors of the shooting are the most divisive and maybe unlikable and frustrated and depressed characters. You know, like Ani and Miles are probably like the most likable in that cubicle setting. And maybe all besides Lauren get more depressed and more unlikable. And how did you interpret the ending with the fact that it ends with him listening to Sarah Tweed's song? I just thought it was, and we kind of talked about this earlier, I thought it was a really interesting way to end the play.
Lauren not responding to that like calling for him was kind of like him standing up for himself and standing up against the system, like very symbolically, and I don't know if that translated, but it definitely felt like he was valuing something more than something else. And in that moment, he was sticking up for like himself and
He has this self-love that the characters don't. Like, Lauren loves himself more than the other characters, I feel like. I mean, besides Nan, but she's like so narcissistic because he cleans himself up.
He does clean
When you
himself up.
walked
Eventually, he
back on
loves
stage, I was
himself.
just like, oh, he's cleaned
Yeah.
up.
He finds that love for himself off stage, and that's like kind of like the craziest thing about it.
Exactly. And speaking of offstage, I think it's so interesting because they don't really go into Gloria's past or present, really, besides the fact that there's two audiences from Act One. There's us, and then the characters offstage, which you say can hear everything, kind of just like capturing this toxicity in this environment. And I don't know if if you were kind of thinking about that reading the script, like, what is Lauren thinking when he is hearing all of this fucking noise, besides the fact that they should keep quiet, even though you have noise canceling headphones that don't work.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
Pre-shooting?
Pre-shooting.
I guess. Oh my gosh. Well, I feel like I had to like kind of like make up the arc of it. Sort of like what he's going through like throughout the day. I feel like he stayed up all night. He says that in the text, but also I feel like he's trying to take his morning nap. And so there's so much to play with. So I feel like morning nap, coffee machine's broken. More and more like shitty things are happening to him that like are causing him to just have a worse and worse day. Mm. And I feel like that was like the strongest choice, was to just kind of like, oh, now we have to redo this whole story. Who died? Like, mm-hmm. What do I have to fact check again? And I think more and more just happens off stage. Like, even in between, I tell them like to be quiet.
Oh, like, really?
Yes. Yeah. That's like after I tell him to be quiet for the first time, that's when I hear about Sarah Tweed for the first time. Mm. And it's like, oh my God, it's such a rush. Like, I have no time. Mm-hmm. So that was hard. You're like trying to keep that engine going off stage, mm-hmm. while everyone else was like screaming at each other on stage. Mm-hmm. But just really took listening to them being annoying.
Yeah.
That's sort of what's happening.
But I feel like with any script I read, whether I'm just like reading it for fun or I'm reading it for performance, mm-hmm. there's like this moment where it's like my line and I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to portray this. I don't know how I'm going to say this. And I wonder, like, was there a moment, if it was like your big fact-checking monologue, that makes sense. But like, yeah. Was there a moment where you're like, I don't really know how I'm going to portray this. I don't really know how I'm going to act this out.
Yeah, there were a couple moments where I was kind of like, oh, man, he's just so sad. He's so like just unhinged in a way. He's lost it a little bit. Like
he's manic.
He's having an episode. Yeah. A little bit. And so just like that was something that I knew was going to be like, oh, okay, that's kind of where he needs to go. You know, I can't play this as just like mopey.
Yeah, there's maybe a certain like energy to the depression that is more energetic when you could have played it like super low. You kind of were very hyper on stage, which added to like the mania, which I thought was excellent. But
one important thing was like his relationship to Sarah Tweed, and like
really, oh yeah, that's interesting.
What he thought of Sarah Tweed. At first, it's just like, ugh, another person that we're doing a profile of over. It's more just like hating the profile. And then I was like, I don't know. I was looking at videos of Amy Winehouse when she won her Grammy.
And she's like, yeah. I'm doing a face over
this. I know. It's like right before she wins the Grammy, she's like, his album's called something something. What goes around comes around.
And then she wins. Clip.
Yes. And so I saw that video and I was like, oh my gosh.
Sarah, I need to tweet. Show you after this an underrated Amy Winehouse.
Oh, movie. Please.
Yeah.
But yes, that was like a light bulb. I was like, okay, that's someone that I can, like, I mean, I cry every time I watch that video. And it's because it's just like, I don't know, she's so special and she's gone too soon. And so I feel like Lauren has that empathy. And so I imagine Lauren, like, looking up a video of Sarah Tweed, listening to Sarah Tweed's music. Off stage. That's what I was doing. I had like 5 songs I had in a playlist that I just like would like listen to. One was Phoebe
Bridgers.
Yes, one of them was Phoebe Bridgers.
Which one?
Can you guess?
I mean, a part of me immediately wants to say Garden Song, but no. I feel like it's not that.
That's a good one though.
I feel like it's Motion Sickness.
It's Scott Street. But also Shine by Alice Phoebe Lou. That was one that I was definitely listening to.
I love Alice Phoebe Lou.
No, but that was what I was listening to music like off stage.
Favorite almost female artist that you felt connected to in a way. Mm-hmm. Why do you think Jenkins decided to double cast everyone purposefully, like he writes it in there,
besides Lauren?
Besides Lauren, and maybe we don't even have to talk about Lauren in this aspect. Mm-hmm. How do you think the actors that you worked with kind of combated with the two roles? I mean, the girl who played Gloria played Nan, and that those are very distinctly different characters.
Yeah.
And Kendra.
Yeah, Kendra and Sasha.
Yeah.
Devin, Dean, and Miles. And
I don't want to be like rude to the actor playing him, but it feels like an easy character to portray. And then you get like this guy's range, like the actor when he is Starbucks, and then when he's Rashad.
Unbelievable.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Daryl killed that. So did Emily. What was even crazier was before we were using the recordings for Nan, Emily would go on as Gloria, come off stage, and then immediately say Nan's lines that Nan says backstage. And she would just like switch characters so quickly. And the voices were so different and like different energies. And yeah, it did make me wonder like why, you know, have these, well.
Well, you're talking top of the top versus bottom of the bottom.
I just
and so that like dichotomy between the two like definitely adds to the play. But have you seen Locke Henry, the Black Mirror episode?
I think I have. Which one is that one?
Okay, it's the one where Ireland suburbs, like in the middle of nowhere, and it's a boyfriend girlfriend, and they want to make a film, and basically they decide to make a film about this guy, the main guy's dad, who died from the serial killer, but then the girlfriend dies while they're making the film, and then he wins an Oscar, and it's like this moment where he's like, I've just profited it off of my own trauma. It like really connected to this.
I mean, like, I'd feel for Dean and Kendra. They just like, I don't know, they were able to play such like, I don't know, people who made poor decisions, like, and were just kind of really just bad people, like. And
do you think they are bad people?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I feel like I've been thinking a lot about like ambition with like Kendra and Dean, and now you see that as kind of like a bad quality in this play, like just
like
sort
a
of
critique
see.
On ambition,
mm-hmm.
and like
big critique on it.
Yeah,
and just there's this sort of insincerity when you're leading with ambition everywhere you go, and it makes me think of like being an actor, you know, and being in this industry. Yeah, it's just really, it's been sticking with me, that idea, and just like, you know, what's the true intent when talking to somebody? It's just talked about so much in this play, like what the true intent is when you're talking to a coworker, you know. You want something out of somebody? Like, what is
it? Or, like, the writer does such a, like, a good job at kind of depicting that humans are often not what they believe themselves to be, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, someone who acknowledges that stereotypes are harmful still harbor, like, stereotypical thoughts. Mm-hmm. And, like, we understand that depression and lack for one's passion for one's work is negative, but, like, that Kendra line is, like, really sticks out there. And, like, I don't know, I feel like that depiction kind of gives us an explanation of, like, Gloria and her, like, existential confrontation with purpose and the gap between dreams and reality. And, like, presenting these contradictions, I wonder what Jenkins is saying here about the human condition and this duality of life. And I wonder if you kind of like came across that in your readings.
It's kind of interesting, especially like going into the city theater experience. I'm in a brand new workplace, right? And so you really are, I'm presented with this new opportunity to present myself, you know, represent myself, sort of like similar to Lauren, you know? And talk to people and reach out and actually like want to connect and get to know them. And I feel like with every new environment that you're in, you know, and hopefully you're experiencing new communities, because that's what this play lacks, isolated around like a bunch of different people.
Exactly, which kind of captures New York City in a way, because mm-hmm. there's so many people and there's so many ways to connect, yet it's like the loneliest city.
Thank you so much for chatting with me today. You're very busy prepping for the Wickham's Christmas at Pemberley, which, by the way, I'm going to link the tickets in the bio. I'm really excited to see it. And you're a full-time student, and you're also a musician, and your music is great. Also going to be linked. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Bye.
Thank you guys so much.